Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. GEICO's been around for more than 75 years, back when they were using Morse code. Sorry, that's just my sense of humor. What's more, with GEICO, you get 24/7 access to licensed agents on the app, online, or over the phone, so you can talk to them at night or in the morning. So forevermore, just know that no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. More power to you. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
What's up, guys? Red Nation Hoops Podcast. My name is Salman Ali at Red Nation Hoops on Twitter. Four-man pod today. We actually had no plan going into this, so we decided let's get four people together that wrote some great stories, and let's go ahead and talk about it. Forrest Walker at DoNots on Twitter. How you doing, man?
Hey, let's roll the ball out. Roll the ball out, see what happens.
Exactly. That's how we roll here. We're just that unprofessional, and we just want to get together and get this thing over with. Also, Taylor Pate at Taylor L. Pate on Twitter. How you doing, man?
What's up, guys? We're going to be KJ McDaniel's chaos and jumping today.
Exactly. Also joined by Paul, a.k.a. at Rocket Intellect on Twitter. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. I have no jokes to make at the moment like the other two guys.
Damn it. I was actually counting on you, Paul, because I actually have no idea what to say now. All right. The first big story of the week, obviously, is Demo and what's going on with him. So as a recap, basically what happened was Brooklyn offered Demo a contract, $36 million over 4 years. The Rockets went ahead and matched it. And what happened is, I mean, Demo just didn't show up to his physical. It sounds like through no fault of his own, I feel like his agent's giving him bad advice.
What? BJ Armstrong giving someone bad advice?
I mean, we now have like a pattern for this guy, like of a solid 3 to 4 weeks of him giving, not even longer than that if you want to go to their start of restricted free agency, of him saying odd things and just being really weird with the media. And I mean, Demo hasn't said anything to, you know, suggest that he has anything against the Rockets, and he didn't show up to his physical. And What ended up happening is, like, I guess he didn't show up because of the incentive structure of his contract. Because what goes on with restricted free agent is you have a primary clause that you're required to match when you match a contract, and there's a secondary clause that includes all these incentives, like a body fat tracker, like some other weird things that basically you get more money for, you know, doing these things. And basically, Demo he lost these intense incentives when the Rockets went ahead and matched, and so the Rockets had to renegotiate with BJ Armstrong and Demo for a new contract of $35 million over 4 years. And what this actually, in my opinion, it looks like a lot better of a deal for the Rockets than that original contract, because now the last 3 years of that deal is non-guaranteed. And the Rockets can trade Demo in 90 days, theoretically, although that 90-day trade deadline is going to go past the trade deadline. So they can trade him as soon as July in restricted free agency. So, guys, like first initial thoughts out of this whole situation.
Okay, I got some thoughts. So, as we know, he's still not with the team yet, even though D'Antoni thought he would be. And reports are that the team is gathering, this came from Woj, that the team is gathering more data about his medical condition, which, you know, it continues to be a concern after Detroit failed his physical during that aborted trade last season. I kind of wonder if he tried to cash out as much as possible on this season because his back is still a really big concern, and that's why they were willing to take this honestly much worse deal just so that they could get a few million more dollars this season for things like working out enough times, which I'm really glad is in that contract.
It's so weird. Like he just shows up to work and checks his body fat, and he gets a few million dollars out of it. Like, it's crazy, right? Like, the kind of incentives that were in his contract. I mean, like, it's really bizarre because, like, as you said, like, he failed his physical, and now, I'm not even sure if he's ever going to join the team. I mean, they're gathering more info, and I don't really know what that means. It's so vague that, I mean, I'm guessing that BJ Armstrong, his agent, kind of released the same statement to everybody, to Woj and to Calvin Watkins and Jonathan Fagan. Like, I just have no idea what's going on here. And, I mean, like, you guys think Demo is ever going to join this team?
I start to wonder if it's going to be almost a toxic situation at that point. I know, you know, they've said that there's no bad blood between he and the players, but at this point, it's like it's been dragged out so far that, you know, it almost seems like Demo and his camp are rebelling a little bit or something.
My worry is that that his back actually is pretty bad, and that the Rockets are getting cold feet because of that. And if his back is really bad, there's not really anything anyone can do about it, except for, I guess, a doctor. So that's kind of the worst case scenario, and hopefully it's not that, because it's bad for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't know what to say here. I mean, because, again, I'm not a doctor, and I don't know the extent to which Demo's back is hurt, but, I mean, this is two doctors which he's failed a physical with. I mean, if you guys remember last year where Demo was traded to the Pistons, and apparently he failed that physical. And he had to remember, if you guys remember, that trade was vetoed, and Demo returned back to the Rockets, and now this is the second physical. I think you're onto something for us, because, again, like, this is two physicals in the span of 1 year that Demo has failed, and he did demand more guaranteed money in that first year. But again, like, even if he did that, I mean, my biggest thing, why the hell would they sign this contract? I don't understand. Like, did they even read it? Because the second year is now non-guaranteed, and so, like, he's, in summation, he's going to get less guaranteed dollars and less of a financial security with this contract than he did with his previous contract. Like, and the team can trade him at will now without his consent. They can trade because if they matched that contract, they had to consent with Demo. But now that the Rockets went ahead and negotiated with Demo directly, they can go ahead and trade him whenever they want. And now, so if the Rockets, they get a big fish in free agency, they can cut bait with them at any time.
If he even gets the contract in the first place, he has to actually get through his physicals first. This is an ugly situation, and I don't know, I hope that it clears up, because agents being stupid is one thing, but someone's back being hurt is something else entirely.
Poor Bobby Brown.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Bobby Brown didn't die for this, man. He didn't die for this. But, yeah, but my biggest thing is, like, the team is definitely better with Demo on it. I mean, can we all agree, like, that's probably true?
Yeah, if he's taking Nene's minutes, then there's certainly, you know, I'm all aboard for that.
Can we talk about Nene's rep for a second? This poor dude. I mean, it's true that he hasn't been the best defender, and he's, you know, he looks like a guy with gray hair out there. But, man, he certainly did very quickly become, like, the whipping boy of the Rockets fandom.
I mean, I had fans tell me in the beginning of the year, like, is he the Corey Brewer of this year? Because, I mean, it feels like it. Like, he feels like what Andy V is to Warriors fan. Anderson Varejao, if you guys don't know who Andy V is. What Anderson Varejao is to Warriors fans, that's exactly what Nene is to Rockets fans. He drives fans nuts. When he checks into the game, in the middle of the game, for no apparent reason, like, if Montrezl Harrell or Clint Capella are performing better than him, he'll check in out of nowhere. I never know when Nene's gonna check in. And then he'll close random games now, because he closed a couple games in this past week with Nene, and I don't know, it's this irritating thing with Mike D'Antoni. I don't know what it is with him. Like, I guess it's the veteran presence, quote-unquote, that MDA trusts with Nene. I don't know. And honestly, like, I'm all for it. Like, you guys know me. I'll slander anybody who's playing bad for the Rockets. Like he's been terrible.
We were warned.
I was confused why he was in on the last possession against the Thunder. For defensive purposes, I just did not understand that at all.
And my thing is, like, he has this pretty decent defensive reputation. I mean, he was a big part of why Washington was good for so many years and on defense, and now he comes
so many years, he says. I mean, it was like two tops.
I mean, they were like a top five defense for so long, and I don't know what it is. They just suddenly lost it, and it's just weird. I don't know what it is with Nene. I think there's probably a reason he signed for the veterans minimum. Now that you look at it, now it's probably not as much of a bargain as we thought in the beginning of the year because of how poor he's played. But yeah, let's go. Let's forget about Nene. I don't know why we're talking about Nene. But I think that's probably a good thing because now we filled some airtime. So you guys all wrote stories this week, so we're here to talk about it. And I'm probably going to title this podcast "Story Time with Red Nation Hoops." So the first story of the week, I think, was Forrest. You wrote a great story on, like, the title is "They Are Who We Thought They Were," and it's basically on the Rockets these past few years, right? And it discusses how expectations drastically changed how we thought of this team and how it's contributing to how well they're doing right now. I mean, if you look at 538, I think they had them projected at like 44 wins, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, if you look at 538 right now, also you're going to get a sugar rush. I've been keeping an eye on those things, and it's getting to be a lot. I'm starting to be like, this can't be real. I'm going to get too full of myself. I think that they are like not just who we thought they were, but they're who we hoped they were.
Yeah,
I think everyone going into the season hoped for the best, and this is honestly better than what we reasonably hoped for, which is great. And even if it doesn't last, which I think we've talked about, that there's no telling how long this is going to last, right? There's always a possibility of an injury or regression or something. We can hope that this is who they actually are, but as far as we can tell, this is a really good team. They have great chemistry, and they're not burdened by expectations. Everyone expected the worst from them, and now they're bucking that. They get to be underdogs again. They love being underdogs, and we love them being underdogs. And we're going to see how long they can stay underdogs while they just keep winning every goddamn game.
And I think there's something to that, the sustainability of all this, because and I battle with this so much because they're 23 games into the season, and to me that's a really solid sample size of what a team's going to be. And they're on pace to win 56 games, and I'm like, there's no way, right? There's no way they're going to win 56 games, right? They're going to lose some games here, right? Like, am I crazy for thinking there's going to be some sort of regression? Like, because they've been so damn good against the top teams in the NBA, and they've lost to only playoff teams. They haven't had one, like, really bad loss yet. I mean, the only loss I can think of off the top of my head is that first Lakers loss. And other than that, they've lost to all playoff teams, and they've lost in close fashion. I think I would say like they've fought to the end of many of those games. Not to say all of them were close, but I mean, it's just a different identity, a different feel in the air, and you can tell by like just how the players like they interact with each other. And it's it's really refreshing. And I'm just like, please God, just don't put some expectations on this team. Like just let them be the fun team that not overachieves, but overperforms what we thought they were going to be this year.
Yeah, they're pissed off, and it's great to watch.
I mean, and I think expectations actually did them really well this year, actually, because I think if we expected this team to be a let's just say a 3 or 4 seed, which they're on pace to do, then I think it would have been really, really different, right? We'd be talking about this team totally differently. Like we wouldn't call this as much of a success as it is now. I think a lot of expectations had to do with how much of a disappointment last season was, right? Because we expected them to be a perennial championship contender going into last season, and you talked about that in your column, and that pretty much laid the basis for possibly the most disappointing season in Rockets history. And I think it's in this case, it's leading to one of the more optimistic seasons in Rockets history. Would you guys agree?
Yo, everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more. Napa
know-how. A Napa guy knows the only way you'd give a fresh and minted driver a brand new car is if he promises to never drive it. Instead, let him grind the gears and knock over the neighbor's mailbox in something a little more suited to his skill level. And with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, he can safely drive something that's nearly as old as he is. It's not perfect, but it's perfect for him. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
Yeah, definitely. The team seems to be playing as one unit. You know, last year you did not see that at all. Basically on a nightly basis, it was, you know, can James Harden win the game for everybody? And how bad does Dwight Howard look, and how many post touches did he want? And, what was the TNT halftime crew going to say? And now it's like you kind of look forward to the halftime show because they're giving the Rockets a lot of praise, and it's just a total culture shift from last year.
Well, you look forward to the TNT halftime show. I still put that crap on mute. I agree.
I just got to take a shower.
I mean, you're right. You're absolutely right. Last year was absolutely hell. Like, right? We didn't even, like, pay attention to the media last year. I think a lot of Rockets fans stopped paying attention. And actually, it's resulting in their attendance figures being so low to start the season. The Rockets are 30th in attendance last time I checked. And so I think a lot of that is because of just basically expectations, right? Like, if this team was going to be as good as we thought they were going to be, I mean, if they were going to be a perennial playoff team, and if everybody thought that, I mean, they'd be getting, like, not as much praise as they are now, right? And they'd be getting mid-attendance figures and all that stuff would normalize. But I think the stigma with this team, I think, benefited them in some ways that it's hurting them in attendance figures, if that makes sense. And so I want to talk about actually Paul's story, because that got a lot of run today. The emergence of Patrick Beverley. Patrick Beverley's just been so damn good, and you outlined that in your column, Paul. Like, he's having possibly the best season of his career on both ends of the floor. I've never seen Patrick Beverley play like this. He's back to where he was defensively 2 or 3 years ago, where he was a perennial all-defensive player of the year. Not all-defensive player of the year, all-NBA defense guy. And he was praised throughout the league for his stingy defense. And I think now his play is starting to live up to his reputation right now. And his offensive game, as you talked about, Paul, has grown tremendously. His passing is like night and day compared to where he was. Like, I'm so surprised at his growth. Like, he's making passes I've never seen him make before, and he's becoming more of an anchor for that second unit. Would you guys agree? Especially you, Paul. I want to hear what you guys say about this.
Yeah, he's done a lot better. He's gotten a lot better at running the offense, and that was something that developed like during the second half of last year. And that's probably the most charming development of the NBA season for me, because Patrick Beverley being like an above average passer was so far out of my imagination like 3 years ago that I probably would have laughed at you, or probably like would have lost all respect for anyone that suggested that Patrick Beverley would have developed into an above average passer. So, that plus his ability to defend, which he has gotten back to this year, has really made him like just an awesome contributor to the team. And him being probably the player that I'm most attached to is just really cool to see. It's cool seeing the people that you enjoy and the people that you have seen on your team, on your favorite team for so long, do so well, like Patrick Beverley.
Yeah, I think his effect on the team in general, along with James Harden, has helped, because if you look, you know, Harden's numbers are kind of down in December, which is, you know, six games. It's about, you know, half of the games that Patrick Beverley has been back. His numbers are down from what they have been. And, you know, his usage is the lowest that it's been. You know, he's, instead of what he's averaging on the season, he's a little bit below that. He's at 25. His rebounds are up, but his assists are down. And part of that is because he hasn't had to do as much. The Rockets haven't needed James Harden as much, because Patrick Beverley's coming in and running the offense and playing defense, and it's showing, because the team overall looks better.
And that's contributed to how good this bench unit's been for the Rockets, because that's something I really wanted to talk about on this podcast, because the Rockets are like really, really deep, like 1 through 10 deep. And that starts with like getting Patrick Beverley in the lineup and getting Tyler Ennis the hell out, like on that bench, right? Because
yeah, it's hard to even think about that now, right? Like in the first couple weeks of the season, we were like, oh, this bench is so bad. How are they going to survive the bench?
And like, if you look at them now, like the biggest thing we're complaining about is Nene. And Nene is like, realistically, without joking aside, like he's not a terrible rotation player. And if he's your worst guy, the Rockets are in a pretty good place right now. Because 1 through 10, like, and you're seeing like bounce back years from Corey Brewer, which I'm pretty happy about because that raises his trade value. But, and you're seeing like, emergences from some of the young guys like Sam Decker and Montrezl Harrell, Trent Arnold, writer for us, wrote a column on this week. You guys should go check that out. Like, you're seeing emergences from these guys, and I think that's contributing to probably one of the best benches in the NBA. I saw a stat by Trent actually that the Rockets are actually like fourth in net rating among benches in the NBA, and that if they can maintain that, I mean, can we start having a conversation about like, are the Rockets better than like just a really scrappy playoff team?
I mean, we've always said, you know, can the Rockets be a top five offense and a top half defense? And we're creeping towards those numbers right now. You know, I think the Rockets right now are like 16th or 18th in defense, and then they're a top five offense, and they look to be, you know, maybe like a top eight team in the league.
Yeah, I think we're already there with that discussion. Like you said, they're getting to that sort of average defense like they need to have, and any advanced metric, including win totals, I guess, shows them to be a top six team, and they're creeping into that top five area. I mean, whether this is sustainable and or whether it will take place in the playoffs as well is a different question, but I don't think they're a scrappy playoff team. I think they're clearly a home court and a first round team right now, so that's extremely good to see. Unless some things happen, you know, knock on wood, they're going to keep playing really well. And eventually people have to unfortunately accept that this is a pretty dang good team.
If you're getting excited about like how many wins this team, how well this team is doing relative to the rest of the league right now, your people are going to freak out after this next week or next 2 weeks or so, because this schedule is just so easy and so like predict. There are so many wins. I look at the next schedule and there it's just, I look at the schedule and even just this month in general and even next month, it's, they're going to be on like a 63-62 win pace by like the end of February.
Their schedule,
or January or something like that. And it gets really tough in March, but
exactly,
it's going to be a fun ride while it's going to be a fun ride while it's happening.
Yeah, I mean, everything's going to be smooth sailing until mid-January. Let's say January 20th, somewhere around there, things are going to get real bad.
Yeah.
And I think the Rockets actually deserve the schedule, man, because they start off the year with like how many road games? 15 out of 20 or something like that?
14 out of 20, yeah.
Yeah, 14 out of, yeah. And that was the second hardest schedule in the NBA. I think only the Dallas Mavericks, I mean, poor Mavericks fans right now, but only the Dallas Mavericks had a you know, more tough schedule. And they actually succeeded very well in that tough environment, and they're coming out and they're getting these freebie games. And I think it's telling of the culture of this team that they're actually winning these games. Because I mean, if you remember last year, and this is something I talked about on Twitter, like they were throwing away these games last year, like to the Sixers, to the Wizards, who were not that great last year, to the Mavericks, and like they were throwing away these games that they shouldn't really be throwing away. And this year, they're not only winning these games, they're blowing them out, right? Like the only team that that's really put up a close fight, that's like a middle of the pack playoff team, is probably like the Utah Jazz and the Oklahoma City Thunder, right? Every other team they've blown out that they're supposed to beat, and that's a great sign for this team. I mean, in my opinion, would you guys agree?
Hey, you got to do what you're supposed to do.
Yeah,
I think that them having an easier schedule now will help them set up for their tougher schedule. I think they'll have more confidence as a unit, and they'll be a little bit more prepared, I guess, because they'll be feeling good. They'll be, you know, the offense will be flowing, especially in these bad the games against bad teams, and the Rockets are going to look like a really great team, and so that's going to help them, you know, then I guess help the narrative against those really good teams that we face after the All-Star break.
Yeah, they've been really crushing the teams that they're supposed to be, which is something that you didn't really see even in 2015 when they made the Western Conference Finals. That team was always just sort of just a team that let the bad teams hang around but ended up beating them in the end.
Okay, if I can interrupt you for a second, that team is what the Grizzlies are this year, right? Like, an absolute clutch team, right? That wins games in low margins, and they really shouldn't be winning these games.
Yeah, I think it's really accurate that this year's team has an actual system and an identity that they're making other teams play. So when they do get in their groove and they get another team to play their game, they just crush them. Whereas, like you said, a couple years ago, they didn't really have that identity, and I think they ended up playing other people's games, and they were tough and like gritty enough to pull it out to make their way through anyway. But now they have their own identity to fall back on, and so they're actually a lot scarier regular season team. Will they succeed in the postseason? We're gonna find out, but that's actually gonna be fun this time.
So the Rockets' defense has been surging this past week. Can this team get to like 15th in defensive rating? Because this is something that me and Paul talk about a lot on Twitter. Like, can they, like, going into this year, we thought they were going to be like our 20th, maybe 15th at highest ranked defense, right? Can they actually get to where they're middle of the pack? And if they get there, how good can this team be as like a ceiling?
I don't know if they can be that high at the end of the season, but I think, like, look at their schedule coming up. Their defense is going to keep surging, if not only just because their defense is doing better lately, but that they're playing a bunch of real suckbats. So they're going to see that defense pull up surprisingly high for a while, and it'll kind of quietly fall off, I think.
James Harden's defensive rating is 98 for the past 6 games.
Go ahead, Paul. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I think this team, if they can get to like 15th in defensive rating, that's definitely a 4 seed, maybe even 3 seed or 2 seed.
Maybe.
Get frisky.
Ooh.
Yeah. Let's go all in on this podcast. The Rockets are winning the championship in 2016-17. You heard it here first, and that's just the bottom line. The Rockets are winning it all. And, you know, this is all, if they don't win it, you can blame Paul, because that's what he said. He said they were getting the 2 seed. But, yeah, I think what you said earlier, Paul, like, the idea of them getting to a 60-win team, like, that's something we did, that wasn't even in our sphere of thought, right? Like, we thought they were going to be a 45 to 50-win team, and at best, like, a 52-win team. And the fact they're on pace to a 56-win team, it still, like, blows my mind. Like, I still, like, this still feels so, like, maybe I'm, like, being a little bit, you know, maybe I'm playing devil's advocate in my head, but, I mean, it feels a little unsustainable, and in a way that I really don't care. I don't care if it's unsustainable. I want to ride this ride as high as I can, because after last year, man, I think Rockets fans deserve this, man. Like, I mean, if you look at the spirits of the fan base last year as compared to this year, I mean, we're making arrogant jokes this year, which is really fun. Like, I'm not used to that. Like, last year, we just wanted the season to end. And now, like, after, like, I think every fan is looking forward to every game, like, and has an expectation of possibly winning it, right? Like, the fact that the Rockets won that Warriors game, like, opened the door to, like, a whole different discussion, right? Like, it opened the floodgates.
A whole level of arrogance.
Yeah, arrogance, right? It opened the floodgates. Like, and now people are starting to pay attention to this team, locally and nationally. And Houston's starting to become, like, a basketball town, man. Like, and that's something, you know, that's something I didn't think I'd see in 2016. Also, Taylor, you wrote a pretty good column on redemption. And basically, like, guys like Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, Mike D'Antoni, James Harden, you know, they've all been labeled with these stigmas. And now I think you were having a discussion with me about possibly renaming this column the Island of Mixed Misfit Toys. And I think that's probably right. Like, it's probably a fitting, right? Because this team is filled with guys who around the league weren't that wanted, right? Like Ryan Anderson, his trade value was depreciating every single day. And like guys whose reputation basically took a hit these past few years, like Mike D'Antoni, who coached two pretty bad organizations. I mean, his reputation was like down to the floor, and now he's gaining it back. And same with Eric Gordon. You know, the question with Eric Gordon wasn't his talent; it was always, can he stay healthy? And seeing him sustain his health at a 23 game pace right now, I mean.
If you don't sit in your lucky seat, your team could lose. So don't leave your lucky seat. But do pick up your phone or computer and order B-Dubs to go. Or if you've got a big group, call in for the party menu. That way you can order wings, pick them up, and get back to your lucky seat. And if you do lose while sitting in your lucky seat, you can still feel lucky eating your feelings. Spicy feelings. Keep your superstitions. We do it for you. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Prices and participation vary. See participating locations for details. Void where prohibited.
He's a damn good player. And at $13 million a year, that's an absolute steal. Taylor, you want to expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said in the column, you know, if you do a Twitter search for Eric Gordon injury prone, you know, it's kind of sad. There are so many tweets that are, you know, giving him props for being a good player. But, you know, it's like that. They have to mention the injuries. And it's unfortunate because, you know, a lot of those games that he missed were, you know, him getting hurt again when he came back from the injury, maybe not staying out long enough. Or then there's the freak injury stuff, like his finger. And, you know, the guy, he's been unfortunate, I guess you could say. And I think there's a quote that says, I'm not injury prone, I'm prone to injuries or something like that. And, you know, it's been a really nice story for him to come here and be close to the front runner for Sixth Man of the Year. Lou Williams is also putting up some pretty good numbers. But, you know, I think that the way that Eric Gordon inflates this team is it's something that's so valuable because he comes in and he's like a mini Harden. You know, he doesn't have the gaudy numbers that Harden has, you know, as far as assists and stuff like that. But you know, he comes in and he's a knockdown shooter. He can drive and dish. He's a really good passer. And you know, another thing with Mike D'Antoni is he's made this entire team a good passing team. The bigs can pass. Patrick Beverley, you know, looks like a real point guard. You know, just everybody seems to know where everybody's at, and it seems to be the general feel of this team is that they understand the offense and that they're getting a lot more comfortable, which is, you know, complete 360 from where we were. And, you know, I also talked about the tragedy that Ryan Anderson went through with his girlfriend. And, you know, then immediately after that, having a terrifying neck injury where he's stretched off the court, and people are questioning his career, whether he's going to be able to come back. And even though he's kind of struggled as of late, he's still, I mean, you wouldn't really say that somebody that's shooting 40% from three is struggling, but hey, look at Steph Curry. But you know, he's kind of finding his fit still. He still takes the contested step back two every now and then, but for the most part, you know, he's invaluable to this team because he's just he can flat out stretch the court further than, you know, most power forwards that I've ever seen. And then I also went on to talk about James Harden's leadership and how that was in question last year. And, you know, he kind of became the media joke. You know, he didn't make the all-NBA teams. He, you know, squeaked into the playoffs and you know, just so many jokes regarding he and Dwight Howard. And it just, he kind of became the laughing stock. And he came back this year and he, you know, he heard all of those comments, and he is, you know, you see him on the court coaching all the time. He's telling guys where to go and what to do. And even on plays where, you know, they get an alley-oop dunk, he's still correcting people and telling them, hey, do this next time. And he looks like a completely different player and a leader. And that's what people questioned. And he is answering the bill.
And I think the story that touched me the most was like Ryan Anderson, right? Because like that story about his girlfriend, like if you guys haven't read the Sports Illustrated piece on, I think it was by Chris Ballard, on Ryan Anderson. I mean, it was just, it was like, it had me all in the feels, man. Because
it's a crazy story.
Yeah, it's incredible, right? Like the amount of tragedy Ryan Anderson had to go through, and to come to where he is now, to be on a real contributor, because like he's actually a positive to the Rockets when he's on the floor, to this Rockets team, to a perennial playoff team. I mean, this is probably the best team he's been on since Orlando, right? I mean, and it's incredible because like you feel good for these guys. You feel good for these guys. Like you feel good for a guy like Eric Gordon, who just couldn't see the floor, and it's not through any fault of his own, but that's just the nature of injuries in the NBA. And
favorite stat of Eric Gordon was he's played 30 minutes per game in every season that he's played. You know, even the seasons that he played 9 games or whatever, he's still able to play those minutes. It's just, you know, when he is, you know, when he does have those crazy injuries, obviously his season gets cut short.
And Eric Gordon's defense, man. I want to talk about that for a quick second because Eric Gordon has been playing out of his mind on the defensive end of the floor to the point to where Mike D'Antoni's praising how good his defense is in press conferences, unprompted, by the way. And like he's playing like he's probably one of the two best wing defenders on the team. Like, is that out of line to say?
I mean, this guy—he was the centerpiece of a Chris Paul trade. I mean, that's that alone. Like, he was the big get in the Chris Paul trade. So he was—I mean, he was regarded as a top five shooting guard, you know, before the big stretch of injuries.
Yeah, he is what Bradley Beal is right now, right? Like a guy who is really damn good, but just can't see the floor. And when he's on the floor, as you said, he was the centerpiece of the Chris Paul trade, and that's something everybody forgets. Like Chris Paul just magically went to the Clippers, you know, for no reason. He was just given away, right? And the reason was Eric Gordon was on track to being one possibly what James Harden is right now, and injuries just derailed him, right? And up until that point, he was on an upwards trajectory to the point where he was going to be possibly the franchise player for New Orleans up until they drafted Anthony Davis. And it's really cool. It's really cool to see what's going on.
Yeah, just to put how good Eric Gordon's shooting has been, to put that into perspective, Eric Gordon is currently on pace to have the second most threes made in a single season ever. And that is in front of many Stephen Curry seasons. Per 36 numbers in 2017. Eric Gordon, three-pointers made per 36 minutes, 4.1 on 43% shooting. Stephen Curry, three-pointers made per 36, 4.1 on 39% three-point shooting.
Wow.
So basically, Eric Gordon has been a better shooter than Stephen Curry this season. And yeah, that's pretty insane.
He sure does go for it, though. Man, yeah. He's definitely turned me around, and a few other folks I watch games with, like, Eric Gordon, I don't know about him, and I'm like, no, you just need to watch a few games, and this man has no conscience in an extremely good way.
They signed him for the same amount of money per year that, like, the Pelicans signed Solomon Hill, and for those Rockets fans who don't know who Solomon Hill is, that's kind of the point. You don't need to know who he is. Just know that they signed him for the same amount of money that the Rockets signed Eric Gordon. That deal is a steal if he stays healthy.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's happy to be out of the Pelicans training and medical room because, man, that training staff there is, I mean, it's the same staff as the Saints. It's not going well. Sometimes it really matters where you are as to how healthy you can stay, and this is a much better situation. The Rockets are an actual quality team. And also, they're kind of blowing people out, so you can keep minutes down and load down a little bit. So, good thing snowball, and hopefully we're going to keep seeing that.
And like when I think of the Pelicans training staff, I think of some grumpy old man telling Eric Gordon to walk it off. Like, that's how bad their training staff has been these past few years. Like, because if you look at how bad their injury history is, I mean, it's incredible, right? Like, you have a good, you made a good point about how they share training staffs with the Saints, and I think it's really affected Eric Gordon's career, unfortunately, in a negative way. But man, it's like, it's incredible, like, to see the stats you were pointing out, Paul, about how he's shooting, like, he's on pace to have the second most 3-pointers of all time, right? Like, in a season. And that's, when I hear that stat, it's incredible for somebody who just got paid like $13 million per for 4 years. I mean, that deal was absolutely, if not the steal of the offseason, probably one of the top three. And I don't even think it's that close.
Yeah, hard to argue with there. Now, the Rhino contract, that's not going to look great in the future, but the Rockets can trade him to the Kings.
I do think that it's less onerous than people act like it is. I know people, were saying it was a really horrible trade. I think we've learned that no trade is unmovable, or no salary is unmovable in this league at this point. So they might have to give up a little. And have they even tried to trade Corey Brewer? He isn't hurting this season, and plus, I'm sure he's lovely to be around.
Oh, I'm like 99% sure. Daryl Morey's made a call about Corey Brewer at some point in the past 2 years. There's no way he hasn't made that phone call yet. But yeah, you guys are right. Like, most contracts in any situation can be tradable, given the right team and the right situation, right? If you package a pick with Rhino, you could possibly move him in year three and get that salary off your books, right? There's no complete situation where a player is probably going to be locked in, unless you're like Joe Johnson being paid like $25 million a year in Brooklyn. Like, there's few contracts that can be absolutely never be traded, and I think the same applies to Rhino. And I think Taylor made a good point on the last podcast and on this podcast. Like, why do you want to trade Rhino? Right? Like, Rhino's been good, and for right now, you're benefiting from the fruits of his labor. I think you probably look to move him, not at this point in his contract, like later, right?
Yeah, that's why I said the I think I said the off season.
Yeah.
The back end of that contract, it's gonna be bad. But for now, we're doing good.
For now, let's only look at now.
Yeah. And I think we actually did a pretty good job for a podcast that had absolutely no direction. And I'm not joking with you guys if I said we had no direction. I have nothing written down on my piece of paper over here. And we literally just turned the mic on and started recording. But yeah, it ended up good. We rolled the ball out, and we beat this podcast like we beat the Warriors. And
this is a D'Antoni podcast.
It's the D'Antoni podcast.
Against all odds.
Against all odds, we managed to put up a successful podcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud for just this month. We're going to be moving off of SoundCloud this month. And we are now on Stitcher. So if you're a user of the app Stitcher, you can now find our podcast on Stitcher. And yeah, guys, good night.